Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Dalet. Shlomo HaMelech's reign was characterized by the total peace and security of Kal Yisrael. They were the most powerful nation in the world, and everyone else is subjugated to them. However, towards the end of his reign, when these sins occurred, cracks began to appear, so to speak, in the structure, and they began to have problems. And this is what the Pesukim are about to describe. Three problems arose, and we will see in a moment their significance. Before we get into that, I have my notes here. I didn't quite finish up the last pasuk. We were talking about the Rebbe of Yoav, who had failed in his job of properly instructing Yoav, and David had threatened to kill him because Arar Osim Lachas Hashem Remia. The Gemara, cursed is the one who does the work of Hashem in a cheating fashion, in a dishonest fashion, not giving a proper effort. So the Rebbe said, if that's the case, there's a curse on me, so what do you have to kill me for? Let me remain with the curse. So to which David HaMelech answered, Arur Monea Cherev Midam. Cursed is the person who holds back his sword from blood. And meaning that if you're supposed to do something and you don't, so then there's a curse on you. So I said, I don't want to be cursed. So the Gemara has two opinions. Gemara has two opinions as to whether or not David ended up killing him. Yesh Rabbim that he did kill him, Yesh Rabbim that he didn't kill him. And the Marsha explains that the two opinions differ on what's pshat in that second curse. Does that second curse go on the person who has the sword, or the person who should have been killed by the sword? So if you are monea cherem midam means a curse of the person who holds back his sword from spilling blood when he should. So then David says, I don't want to have a curse, so I have to kill you. Or are monea cherem midam means curse is the person whose the sword was held back from. Meaning if you don't get killed, then Hashem will take care of you. So if that's the case, then David says, okay, I don't have to do anything, let Hashem take care of you. So yiyah ma sheyiyah, apparently being a Rebbe is a more dangerous job than one would normally anticipate. But the
Shiva?
Yes.
But didn't David HaMelech lose the right of building the Beit HaMikdash because he had so much blood on his hands? So there was the second version of the first version then.
But either way, that may be, but it's not that he did anything wrong. He can't build the Beit HaMikdash, but it still could be it's the right thing to do. Okay, Pasuk Yudalet, Vayakem Hashem Satan Lishlamo. Hashem rose up a adversary to Shlamo. The literal meaning of Satan is an adversary, somebody who is opposing you. Es Hadar Hadad Ha'adomi, Hadad the Edomite, Mizera HaMelech of Edom. He was a descendant of the kings of Edom. Actually, I'm sorry, we actually did that. We're further than that. We're up to Pasuk Yud Zion. Let us proceed. Vayivrach Hadad hu v'anoshim adomiyom me'avdei aviv. Hadad and some other Edomite people escaped from the servants of his father, meaning the servants of Shlomo's father. For the servants of Hadad's father, they escaped, ito with him, lovo Mitzrayim, to go to Egypt. Hadad Narkon, at the time, Hadad was a young boy. Now, what is very strange about this whole episode, let's read a few more Pesukim and we'll get the whole picture and we'll comment on some of the very strange. Again, nothing is strange if you view it from the perspective that we view it, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world and it's not so-called history. But if you believed in history, this is a very strange episode. So you have this battle in Edom. Basically, Edom gets wiped out, and there's one of the children or grandchildren or whatever it is, Mizar HaMelech, along with some followers, escapes. Now, on the way to Egypt, Vayakumu mi Midian, they passed, he came from Midian because Midian was in between Vayvel Paran. Vayikra Nashim mi Paran, they got people from Paran also to follow them. Vayavo Mitzrayim el Paran Melech Mitzrayim, and they came to Paran, the king of Egypt. Vayitano Bayis Velechem, I'm sorry, Vayitano Bayis, he gave him a palace, a house, Velechem Amarlo, and he commanded that his supplies be provided. Ve'eretz Nasano, not only that, he gave him land, meaning a province, to rule over. He made him a big shot. And he found a great deal of favor in the eyes of Paro. And he gave him a wife, Esachos Ishto, his own wife's sister. He made him his brother-in-law, Achos Tachpenes HaGevira, the sister of Tachpenes, the great woman. Tachpenes was Paro's wife. So, in other words, he was welcomed with open arms, made part of the family, right? His wife's sister was given to him as a bride. He was made the ruler over a province and treated just great. But Achos Tachmanes says Gnuas Bino. Achos Khan gave birth to Gnuas, his son, Vatigmaleu, and she weaned him. Tachmanes Batok based Paro. But he Gnuas based Paro, Besokmane Paro. Gnuas was treated like one of the sons of the king, even though he was a nephew of the king. She's like one of the sons of the king. There's significance in the fact that she weaned him, because then we will see that Adad felt that he was able to leave. So the, if you look at it from a simple historical perspective, and we must understand that everything that kings and rulers did were done with awareness of political consequences. So here you have David HaMelech, who is at the height of his power. This is not long before Shlomo takes over, and he has defeated his enemy, dramatically, and you got a few survivors, including the son of the king. Now you have Paro, who has to be afraid of David HaMelech, clearly afraid of Shlomo, afraid of David. Why in the world would you provide safe harbor to this guy who's running away from David? Like, that is a very dangerous and foolish thing to do. What's in it for you? Who did you provide harbor to? To this Hadad, who the Pasuk describes as Nar, as a young kid. It's not like he has any power of his own. He's got a few servants of his father's stragglers that have come along with him. So why take him? Not only that, he goes to Midian, and more people follow him. Why would they do that? And then, not only does he take him in and provide him safe haven, he makes him part of the family, he puts him in charge of one of the provinces. That's asking for trouble. Right, let's say you like the guy, he's a cute kid, you know, whatever it may be. Take him in, quietly, get it under the radar screen. You know, you want to take care of him, that's dangerous enough. But you've got to broadcast it. You know, you're really asking for trouble. This is taking place to some degree. Hadad's entrance into Mitzrayim preceded the rule of Shlomo HaMelech, but this treatment, this royal treatment, if you will, of that continued during the reign of Shlomo HaMelech, even when Shlomo is marrying Bas Paro. So this is really a very, very strange thing, but it's not strange at all, because this was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tool, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was keeping Adad around because we have a rule that was already established by Yitzhak Avinu, which is that when Klal Yisrael keeps the Torah, we are superior to Edom and rule over Edom. But if Klal Yisrael does not keep the Torah properly, Edom gets the upper hand. So we need Edom. Edom has to be around. And of course it is the ultimate Mida Keneged Mida for Kadosh Baruch Hu, that when Paro sinned when Shlomo sinned, and the source of his sin, Be'etzem, was Bas Paro, although there was other wives involved or other issues involved, but Bas Paro was singled out as being the most important negative influence. If you recall the pasuk mentioned before, as Bas Paro was kol nasha, that Bas Paro was more of a problem than all the other wives put together. So Shlomo HaMelech's sin came through Bas Paro. So naturally, his punishment also came through, not quite Bas Paro, but the household of Paro. So it makes sense that the potential adversary to Klal Yisrael is being sheltered by Paro and being protected by Paro, and in the end, when he causes trouble, it comes from the household of Paro. What's even more is you see again the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world and our hishtadlus should not be overdone. We mentioned earlier a number of times that one of the main motives that Shlomo Melech had in marrying all these women was to for the security of Klal Yisrael. Because you have a relationship with these kings, then they won't start up with you. So what did he do? He married Bas Paro. That's supposed to create security with Egypt. Didn't work very well. Ultimately, had he not married Bas Paro, they would have had no problem with Mitzrayim. But now that you did, you ended up with a problem. So you can't beat Hashkacha. Come up with all your ideas. So if, of course, there is an inyan of Hishtadlus, you do have to make an effort. But you have to first determine whether that effort is proper. If the effort is proper, go for it. But there was a misjudgment on the part of Shlomo Melech. The effort really was not proper, or was not completely proper, and therefore it didn't work. So what happened? So we have Hadad escaping to Egypt and being elevated in that land, becoming a prince almost, a ruler over one of the provinces, a brother-in-law of the king. His son is treated like a son of the king. But Hadad is not interested in staying in Mitzrayim. Hadad shama b'Mitzrayim ki shachav David im avosav. Hadad heard the news in Mitzrayim that David was laid to rest with his fathers. The chimeis Yoav sar hatzavan, Yoav the general had died. And these were the people that he was afraid of. Right? It was David and Yoav that defeated Edom. Vayomer Hadad el paro shalcheni ve'elcha ratzi. Send me and I will go back to my land. So now he wants to leave Mitzrayim and start up with Klal Yisrael. He has a good. Right? He has a good in Mitzrayim. I don't know the exact statistics, but one would assume that the rulership that he had in Mitzrayim was superior to anything he could have in Edom, because Edom had been defeated and been wiped out. So whatever remained there is only stragglers and leftovers and whatever it was that was there. And here he is ruling in Mitzrayim, probably a pretty nice, comfortable position. Has nothing missing, as the pasuk is going to say in the next pasuk. Paro was somewhat offended by this request. And but he wants to go because he wants his revenge on Klal Yisrael. Maybe he wants his own melucha, but that's the way people are. People get involved in their, what you might call it, their personal vendettas, their gripes, whatever it is, and they don't always do what objectively would be in their own best interest. Sina mekalkelas es hashura, Chazal said. Hatred messes up a person's judgment, a person's line, and he doesn't see properly. Now, we have an interesting use of words here. By David, the expression is shachav im avosav. He was laid to rest with his fathers. And by Yoav, the expression is meis, that he died. Chazal note this difference, and there are a number of interpretations. We'll discuss two of them. One is a somewhat technical in nature. Shachav, lay to rest, implies a natural death. David died a natural death. Yoav was killed. So shachav is, he went to bed and you didn't get up in the morning. Shachav imavosa. But Yoav, who was killed, the Navi uses the expression meis rather than shachav imavosa. Another pshat mentioned in Chazal is that shachav is not quite dead. When a person leaves behind someone to replace him, then he isn't really dead. And David left behind his son Shlomo, who is Mamale Makomo, and therefore he didn't die. Chazal say that this is only true if the replacement is worthy. And again, we see from here the greatness of Shlomo. Despite the criticisms that the Pasuk says of Shlomo, even right now, when this is not a pasuk that was written before the chayit, this pasuk is written in reference to Shlomo after the chayit, he's still called Shachav im Avosav, because basically Shlomo was a great tzaddik and was a successor, a worthwhile successor to David, although he fell somewhat short of David, but he did, in essence, continues David's legacy.
Wouldn't it also have to do with, based on the person themselves, like Reinhard Yekon and Shaka Levavosa and those different levels?
What do you mean? I'm not sure what you mean.
Could like it sound like the Shaka Levavosa, it might be that the terminology that's used might be based on the level of the person themselves. Like, I guess there are, you know, the Avos were by Yigba and...
Okay, there is an interpretation in Chazal somewhat along those lines that says that David was a melech, it says shachavim avosav, and Yob was only a sar, therefore it says meis. I'm not quite sure though what that means. I'm not sure why shachav is considered a higher level expression, but it could be that there is something to that. In a related concept, here in Chazal are talking about leaving a successor to fulfill your role. There are other ways in which a person, so to speak, remains alive. A famous Chazal, that if a person teaches Torah, and then his Torah is repeated in his name, after he's dead, Svasav Dalvos V'Kever, he lives with Shnei Olamim, he's living in two worlds, he's really, in a certain sense, alive in this world. In fact, Gemara relates the story about Rabbi Yochanan, who was upset at Rabbi Lazar, that Rabbi Lazar said over some of his Divrei Torah without quoting him. And in the end, he was comforted when they said, everyone knows basically that everything Rabbi Lazar says, he says in your name, just like we find by Yeshua, that Yeshua didn't say Moshe said this, Moshe said that. Everyone knows whatever Yeshua said was from Moshe. But the Gemara asks, why was Rabbi Yochanan so makvid? And the answer was, because he wanted the schus of Svas of Dovavos V'Kever, that he should still remain alive in this world. I often wondered whether or not, in order for that to apply, you have to get right pshat. Now, today, we all say over the Torah of Yochanan and Rabbi Lazar and Rav and Abaya and everything else. I don't know if we get it right, we get it half right, a quarter right, a tenth right. I'm not sure how that works. But certainly the concept behind it is that if your Torah is here, in a real sense, you're still here. You're having an impact on the world, just as you did in your lifetime.
Did you have any children?
I don't know. It could be he did, but they weren't mamale makomo, and they didn't step up. They weren't they didn't become sarim and leaders and so on. They didn't fill the void that he had left. Okay, so Hadad wants to go back to Edom. Paro is not happy with this request. Vayomer lo Paro ki mo ata chaser imi. But what are you missing with me? Vini vakesh laches laches el artzecha, and you want to go back to your land? I'm treating you great. What's lacking? Why would you want to leave me? Vayomer, and he said, lo ki shalech teshalchei. No, but you should indeed send me. So the Kliyakar points out that there appears to be a debate here. The Lashon Ki is oppositional. We find in the Chumash we have a pasuk from which the famous halach of Moda B'Miksas is learnt out. Moda B'Miksas is where a person claims a certain claim against his opponent. You owe me $100. And the other defendant admits to part of it. I owe you 50, not the other 50. So he's required to swear. And it's learned from a pasuk that says, "Kol davar asher yomar ki hu zeh, ad elohim yaviu dvar shneihem." Anything that you say, "ki hu zeh," but this is the way it is, you have to come to court, you have to swear. It doesn't say really anything in the pasuk about Moda B'Miksas. But the diuk is from the Lashon Ki. Ki means I'm opposing you. You say one thing, I say ki, but hu zeh, it's this way. It's not that way, it's this way. That's the implication that there's a mode of mixas. So if you say ki ma'ata chosra, and then he says lo ki shalech tashalecha, then there's a debate going on. It's not that way; it's this way. So the Kliyakar suggests that the debate is that Paro said you're going to embarrass me. Here I take you into my house, and you leave my house to go to a broken down, decrepit country. Imagine what people are going to think. They must think how badly I'm treating you. What a terrible, not a father-in-law, he's a brother-in-law, but you know, brother-in-law could be difficult too. So what terrible treatment you must be getting in the house of power if you're going to walk away from a life of luxury, from prominence, from kavod, from ruling over a country, to go back to your decrepit, run-down, broken-down rule in Edom. It's going to look bad for me. How could you do that to me after all I've done for you? How could you make me look bad? This was the argument of Paro. So what was the counter-attack of Hadad? And eventually he persuaded Paro. He says, you'd be right. By the way, there's a halacha that in a way is a similar idea. There's a halacha that if a person visits a town and there's a place that he stays in that town, he should not change that when he comes back another time. Al Yishana Bachsanya. Because we learn it from Avraham Avinu, because it may reflect badly. The last time you stayed in Chaim Yankel's house, and now you're not, maybe Chaim Yankel didn't treat him so nicely. People are going to think it looks badly for him. So at least he has the opportunity. He says, no, it's a different story. But there is a... one should not be Mishan Machsanya, Maurice says, because of this thing. It's going to reflect badly. So this is Paro's taina. It's a good taina. It's going to look bad. After all I've done for you, how can you make me look bad? So answered Hadad, but that would be true if I was going someplace else. But when you're going to your own home, everybody could understand. There's no place like home. As humble as it may be, how's the song go? As humble as it may be, Itaka Edom is no great shakes at this point. Of course, yeah, I must have had ambitions to build it up, but it was nothing. But it's my home. And he does say, Ve'edechel Artsi, it's my land, it's my home. So he says, that's not going to reflect badly on you. Everyone understands a person has certain feelings towards his own home, even if it's not as good as where he is now. And therefore, you should allow me to go. Now again, what's kind of interesting from the point of view of Hashgacha, which is the only point of view that counts. Well, it wouldn't be appropriate. You're in the king's house and he took you in. It's not proper derech eretz to leave without his permission. And he could certainly you imagine, Paro was upset even at the request. Imagine how upset he would have been had Dad left on his own. Then he may have chased him and done something. So so he did ask the request. Now, when did this discussion between Hadad and Paro take place? So let's read the Pesukim. Vayishma, Hadad Shama b'Mitzrayim, Ki Shachad David es Avosav, V'chi Meis Yom. Now, granted, there were no newspapers and no CNN, and certainly no text messaging. But how long do you think it would take for an event like that to spread? The death of David HaMelech, the death of Yoav, is big news. So it travels a little more slowly. It takes a few weeks, a month, a couple of months. So we're talking about something on or around the beginning of Shlomo's rule. Nothing happened for more than 30 years. So why not?
Because he didn't sin.
Hadad was ready to go. Hadad was interested the moment that David died. He was ready to go. He was ready to start up. Presumably, we don't know exactly what happened. Maybe Paro at first refused and Paro later agreed. I don't know. We don't know what happened. But whatever happened, nothing took place for 30 plus years, because this is not history. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Kol Zman that there was no chait, Hadad could do what he wants, but he ain't going to be able to do anything against Klal Yisrael. But it's only at the time of the chait that all of a sudden things start going into action. So there is a 30 plus year gap between the time that this conversation took place until anything was done about it. Talk about bureaucracy. Right? It makes me feel better. It didn't take us that long to build this building. What was it? 15 years? I don't know. Less than 30. Although I do recall when I was in Blatcher that Rashi was already talking about a new building back then. That was more than 30 years ago. In fact, Rav Ginzburg may remember this. I remember what made a big splash in the shir was he looked at something, I think, in Poughkeepsie. There's a campus. Plainview too, but there's a campus in Poughkeepsie. Rashiva comes back all excited. We looked at this campus in Poughkeepsie, New York, acres. I don't remember all the details, but it had a basketball court and baseball fields and acres of land, maybe a swimming pool, I don't know, a dormitory, basement. Everything was there. You know, it had been a monastery or something. It was great. So we asked the Shimon, so are we moving? He says, well, we're still negotiating the price. Says, what do you mean negotiating the price? So you have to realize this is a while ago, but they're asking for $2.5 million. So, okay, and what are we offering? $750,000. That was negotiating the price. The Shimon calculated we could afford $750,000, so that's what he offered. So, again, the length of time was directly because of the fact that Kodesh Baruch Hu wasn't ready for this to happen. Okay, so that's problem number one. As we will see, there are actually three problems that accumulated in the end of Shlomo's days. One was Hadad, the king of Edom. The second one that we're about to read about is Rizon ben Elyada. And the third one was in Kali Yisrael itself, was Yeravam ben Nevat, who of course will be the subject of some very important discussions and a very important historical figure. And to this day, he is the prototype of a Chote Yomachti Es Yisrael, a sinner who causes other people to sin. And when we get a little bit of a picture of who Yeravam was, we will discover, as you almost always do, that he's a far more complex figure than the simple biblical stories that you may have heard as a child. So we shall see what happens. So Sutton number one was Hadad, the king of Edom, or the descendant became the king of Edom. Sutton number two, Pasuk of Gimel. Vayakam Elohim lo Satan, Kadosh Baruch Hu set up for him another adversary, as Rizon ben Elyada, a fellow by the name of Rizon ben Elyada, Asher Barach Meis Hadarezer Melech Tzoba Adonav, who escaped from Hadarezer, the king of Tzoba, his master. And the Mefarshim say he was actually a slave of Hadarezer. Vayikbo Tzalav Anashim, he gathered together a following. Vayhi Sar Gedud, Baharo Gedavid Osam, and he was the master of a gang that David killed. So again, he was an escapee from David HaMelech. Vayelchu Damesek. So he went to Damesek in Aram. Today is Damascus. This is Damesek. Vayeshiva, he lived there. Vayimelchu Vanasi, he became king. Again, you have this renegade. He was an escaped slave. Got together a band. Basic gedud usually means robbers. He was nothing much more than a pirate. And his gang got wiped out by David HaMelech, but he escaped. Runs off to Damascus. He's not from Damascus, and all of a sudden he becomes king. Now, so he's an enemy of David as well, Kaisel, because he killed off his gang. So we have another son. So again, from an historical expression perspective, it's a bit far-fetched that such a thing should happen, but it did happen because Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted it to. And it goes on to say, Pasuk of Dalit, Pasuk of Hei, Vayhi Satan li Yisrael, he was an adversary, a pain in the neck for Kal Yisrael, Kol Yemei Shlomo, all the days of Shlomo. So the Mefarshim point out what that means is all the rest of the days of Shlomo, because we know that for the majority of Shlomo's reign, they had no problems whatsoever. But from the point of time that he began to bother them, he remained a constant source of irritation for the rest of the days of Shlomo. The Esara Asher Hadad, and also the evil that was done by Hadad, by Yokats Bi Yisrael, and he became disgusted with Kal Yisrael by Yimlach Ad Al Aram, and he became the king of the entire Aram. He started off being just the king of Damesek, and eventually became king of the entire country, and they became enemies of Kal Yisrael. The Kliyakar suggests that we'll save a little bit, the discussion of Yeravam. So we'll talk about the first two. But the Kliyakar suggests that we found in Chazal and Yerushalmi three tainus against Shlomo HaMelech. that led ultimately to his failure to properly supervise the Avodah Zarah. One was he had too many wives, one was that he had too much money, and the other one was that he had too many horses. So he said, the too many wives, each one of these satans, each one of these adversaries corresponded to one of the chatan. Too many wives, the adversary was Hadad. How did Hadad come to be in a position of power? Because he was ingratiated himself to Paro, married his sister-in-law. So through his wife, he became an influential and powerful person. So you're marrying all these wives in order to, so to speak, create security for Kal Yisrael, and somebody else is going to marry wives in the household of Paro, and through that is going to create service for Kal Yisrael. So that's the Mida Keneged Mida. Hadarezer, Rizon, who escaped from Hadarezer, so he was an Eved. Typically, the big problem that Avadim have is money. An Eved cannot own anything, cannot become wealthy, he can work as hard as he wants, but everything he produces goes to his master. So the presumption is that the main reason why Rizon escaped was because he wanted to have money. So what did he do? He got himself a band of robbers. That's a quick way to make money. So it was the drive for money that motivated Rizon. When David HaMelech basically took that away from him by killing his gang, so then he became an enemy and wanted to take revenge. So the force driving Rizon was the accumulation of money, and that became the Satan Keneged, the money of Shlomo HaMelech.
One question?
Yes.
This end of this pasuk, because it's Hadar, and then this is Miyumloch al Aram. So you're saying that the Rizon,
yes,
Ram,
yes,
not Hadar. Well, right. Why did
you
say Hadar here?
That's a sort of like a parenthetical insert that Rizon was creating Eivah v'Gaisel along with Hadar, and then it goes back to Rizon, and he became the king of Aram. Now we get to the parasha of Yeravam. The Yeravam ben Nevat, Ephrasi. Simple pshat, there is some dispute exactly who he came from, but I'm going to stick to the simple pshat. There's enough to say without getting sidetracked in that, but he was from Shevet Ephraim, Minha Tzereda, from the area of Tzereda, Vashem Imo Tzerua, the name of his mother was Tzerua, Isha Almana, a widow, Eved L'Shtoma, he was a servant of Shtoma, Vayorem Yad B'Melech, and he raised his hand up against the king. So who was Yeravam? So the Chazal Darshan, we know in from many, many places that a person's name has significance. So Chazal Darshan, the name of Yeravam, it says Yeravam comes from Meriva, from argument. And Yeravam was one who caused arguments. He caused arguments in Klal Yisrael because through Yeravam, the kingdom was divided and created a constant source of tension, in some cases even war. And he caused a meriva between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu because he was a chote umafti, prevented the practice of Olah Regel, he introduced Avodah Zarah, and the truth of the matter is the Melaches Asaras HaShvatim never recovered from Yeravam. And if you go through the entire history of the 10 tribes, they really never had any period of time where you find the pasuk saying, Vasisa Yashar Beni Hashem. Malchus Yehuda had its difficulties too, but there were ups and downs, and there were many periods of time where in Yehuda, Klal Yisrael was tak observing the Torah and being loyal to Hashem, and a period of tzidkus, of righteousness. But you didn't really find that in the Asaras HaShvatim. They never really recovered from the negative influence of Yeravam. Yeravam was chosen to be king by a Navi. He did not ascend to the throne on his own. And we will read about that in a few psukim later. So we're not dealing with a simple person. Why would a Kadosh Baruch Hu pick Yeravam to be the king if not for the fact that he was very suited for the job? And he had tremendous potential and tremendous greatness. So much so that Chazal tell us, and Darshan also from psukim, a few psukim later, that Taraso shall Yeravam lo haya bo shum dofi. The Torah of Yeravam had nothing improper in it. There's no dofi, there's nothing corrupted, nothing improper in the Torah of Yeravam. He was a Talmud Chacham par excellence, and we know from many, many Maamar Chazal that it is impossible to have a Torah without dofi unless you have a lot of Midos Tovos. It has to be on Nova, and there has to be many, many other things. So that means Yeravam was a very great person. How great, again, Chazal Darshan from Pasuk later, that it says, let's take a look at the pasuk. It's kedai to see it. Pasuk Chavtes, it says, Achya HaShiloni comes, who is a Navi, comes to meet Yeravam, Ushnehem Levadam Basada. And the two of them were alone in the field. So he says, what is that? Chazal Darshan, Shekol Talmidei Chachamim, Domim Lifneim Ke'esev Hasada. The two of them were alone in the field, everybody else was just grass. In other words, they were far superior to any of the Talmidei Chachamim in their generation. Now, to properly understand what that means, we need to understand who Achya Shiloni was. So Achya Shiloni was a Navi, that says a lot already. But there are other Nevi'im. But those other Nevi'im, compared to Achya Shiloni, were like grass in the field. So that's how great Achya Shiloni was. In fact, when the Rambam gives his list of the Mesorah from generation to generation, Achya Shiloni is in that list. He is the leader of that generation in terms of Torah. He was the Gadol Hador of his generation. And close to him, in stature, was Yeravam ben Nevat. Upon which it's possible to say that he and Yeravam were Levadam Basada, and nobody else could match them. Everybody else was mere grass compared to Yeravam and Achya Shiloni. So there was a lot of greatness in Yeravam ben Nevat. Yet, it didn't work out very well. In fact, it was probably his very greatness that contributed to the tremendous disaster that he caused. Because if he wouldn't have been such a talented, gifted, powerful person, he probably could not have exerted such a great negative influence. So, he did that. What was the cause? It would seem in the indications from Chazal are that the downfall of Yeravam was that the kavod of his malchus went to his head. And in fact, the first step that Yeravam did to be machti, to cause sin, was to prevent Klal Yisrael from being Ola Regel in Yerushalayim. Why? Because the halacha is that when you're in the Azara of the Beis HaMikdash, everybody has to stand with one exception. A king from Beis David. So Yeravam says, I go to the Azara, and Rechavam, Shlomo's son, is in the Azara, and he'll be sitting and I'll be standing. It doesn't look good for me. So I'm not going to go. But then how will it look if I, the king, don't go to be all the Rego, and everyone else is going to be all the Rego? Can't have that. So nobody's going to be all the Rego. So this was the cause of his initial. Other things happened afterwards, but this was it. Chazal, in a astonishing Chazal, you get used to it if you've heard it before, but if you really think about it, it's an unbelievable lesson. The Chazal tell us that a Kadosh Baruch Hu approached Yeravam and said, Chazor b'cha, do tshuva. Again, that shows you the greatness of Yeravam. And if you do tshuva, aniv atah uven yishai nitayel b'gan Eden. You and I and Ben Yishai will take a stroll together in Gan Eden. So what was Yeravam's answer? Me barosh. Who's first, David or me? So he said, Ben Yishai barosh. So if that's the case, I'm not interested. So it was the kavod that ended up doing him in and causing such a tremendous mapala. Kavod is a very seductive force. I heard a word from Rav Lezer Plashinsky Zatzal that he says, we find by Shaul HaMelech that Shaul did not want to be king. And when he began to get wind of the fact that they were out looking for him, the famous expression, someone was nechba el akelim, he hid amongst the utensils, hiding behind the barrels. They shouldn't find him. They found him anyway. So he didn't want to be king. He didn't want the cover. He didn't want the power. He didn't want the limelight. When he became king, and along comes Shmuel HaNavi and tells him that you're going to lose the Melucha, and after some argument and discussion, so he says, Kabdeini no neged ha'am. Honor me in front of the people. Here's the person who doesn't want honor. Nechbel HaKelim. When Shmuel came and told him he was taking away the king, he said, oh, thank you. He should have said, oh, thank you so much. I'm so glad to hear it. But that was before he became king. once he became king, it has a certain power. He didn't want to let go. Rav Plushinsky went on to say, I won't get into the specifics as he was talking about a particular individual, but he was also talking about a general principle. He says, this is one of the great problems of democracy. Right? Democracy happens to be probably a safer choice of government than most other forms of government today. But I'm not quite sure if that's really what's recommended by the Torah. We don't find that. I don't want to be anti-democratic here. But he says one of the great problems of democracy is that you have to seek office. A person gets into power because he's running after it. Today you really have to run after it. Well, the primary, you want to be president of the United States, look what you have to go through. How much money you have to raise and how much time you have to spend nonstop, day and night. You're chasing it. So a person is chasing kavod. Imagine how much kavod goes to his head. If Shaul HaMelech was running away from kavod, is affected, Yerovam ben Nevat was also not chasing kavod. The Navi came to him and said he should be king. He didn't volunteer for the position. It is true that we'll find later that he did, in a certain sense, in some degree, rebel against Shlomo, or act out against Shlomo. But we don't find any indication that Yerovam wanted to be king until Achia Shiloni told him so. But then look how it affected him. So if somebody is running after it in the first place, then how much more so is that going to affect him? And this is a problem. The bright side is that they don't have that much power in democracies. And, you know, at least in the United States, with the checks and balances and everything else. So there's a limited amount of damage you could do. After all, even if you do become president, you can only be there for 8 years, and you got to deal with Congress and the Supreme Court and stuff. So hopefully, it keeps the damage in check. In fact, the whole chachma of the American system of government is to make it as inefficient as possible. It's really, like, by definition, a terribly inefficient system, and they wanted it that way because they're afraid of the abuse of power, and if it's efficient, then you can really efficiently abuse it. If it's inefficient, you can't do much good, but also can't do that much harm. So we muddle along. It seems to have worked somewhat for a while. From a historical perspective, the United States hasn't been around that long. So, you know, oh, great America, what is it? Like 200 and some odd years, like big deal. The Roman Empire lasted longer than that. So we'll have to see. But there is a problem in seeking kavod and attaining power through that means. Okay, we will continue our discussion of your